This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every week, available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers to give you an insight into both what goes into getting those films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. This week, we're talking with Aram Rappaport, the writer and director of the new movie, The Crash. The Crash, which is now on video on demand, by the way, stars Frank Grillo as Guy Clifton, a very intelligent man who manipulated the U.S. financial system for his own gain, only to get busted, and now he's facing serious jail time. When the U.S. government realizes there is an impending breach by cyber terrorists that could crash our very system, they agree to bring in Guy and his team of hackers and programmers to stop it before it ruins America. The film also stars the always stellar Minnie Driver as his business-savvy wife, dealing with both her husband's possible prison sentence and also her daughter's serious medical affliction. She is great in this movie, by the way. The film also stars Christopher McDonald and John Leguizamo, among others. The one very distinct difference between Crash and a lot of the other thrillers in this genre is that Guy Clifton, in my interpretation, is no hero. He's selfish, he's greedy, he has manipulated his way to the top, and the only people he seems to respect throughout the film are his family, who also kind of end up wearing the burden of his actions. It's an interesting dynamic, and we talk about that in the interview specifically. Director Aram Rappaport stopped by to discuss his new film, the challenges in getting it made, how he corralled such a solid cast, as well as exactly how he makes computer hacking look sexy. This is something I always wanted to know, because I've done many things with a computer, and it has never looked engaging when I've done it. So we definitely discussed that, and it's very interesting. This is a great interview with an up-and-coming director. I hope you guys enjoy it. Take a listen as we discuss The Crash, which is now on video on demand, with director Aram Rappaport. Hey, Aram.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. The one thing I always like to ask everybody that I talk to, first thing is, what really put the spark in you to want to be a filmmaker? Was it a moment in time, or was it something that happened when you were a kid? When did you know you wanted to do this?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, I was always enamored with like the creative process and sort of controlling like another world, another sort of universe that was sort of in my control. And so I think that dated back to, you know, like even preschool, putting on plays and things like that. And I think it sort of evolved into, you know, wanting to act. And then that kind of quickly realized into directing, because I realized that, you know, as an actor, you weren't necessarily in control of the destiny of the story. So, I mean, I think, you know, sort of always in me, I always wanted to tell stories in one way, but I think the facet that was most interesting was, you know, being able to commit to, you know, a different world, or commit to, you know, elements that don't necessarily exist in your everyday life. And, you know, because you're committing to them, you know, you get to hire a bunch of people and share that vision with them, and then live this sort of other world for a limited period of time. So that was sort of the motivation for me.
What was your journey through Hollywood? Was it, did it come to you rather quickly, or was it a constant fight? I mean, everybody has a different story in that respect.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's always a constant. I mean, even this movie was a constant fight. I mean, we had no money, and then we lost money, you know, going into production. It was trying to figure out how to fight to just, you know, keep the movie alive. So, I mean, I think that every step of the way, it's definitely difficult. I mean, for me, I sort of happened into writing because my father is a writer, and he teaches screenwriting as well. So he has always said that you should, you know, not be a victim of the industry and write when you can. So that was sort of, you know, embedded in me early on to write for me to either, you know, or earlier it was, you know, write to act, and then, you know, more recently in the last some years it was, you know, write to direct, write to create. And so, you know, I always knew that I was like writing within my means, or trying to write within my means. I think this latest film, you know, we got a little ambitious, and then there were budgetary issues. But for me, the path has always been, you know, write something that I felt that I could produce, that I could execute. You know, even if that was something that meant, you know, just going out with friends and shooting it on my own, or something that I knew I could raise money for because I knew some guys in the financial system, or I knew I could raise money for it because it was, you know, based on a book. And so, you know, I always took the holistic approach. It was never like, well, I'm going to write this and then someone else is going to figure it out. It was always like, okay, well, if I want to get this made, I'm the only one I can rely on. So, you know, I better make sure that it fits within a circumstance that allows that.
And the movie's centered around the stock exchange, financial markets, et cetera. Can I ask what really generated your interest in doing this and this concept specifically to begin with?
Sure. And I mean, you know, this concept went through a lot of iterations. I mean, mm-hmm. this was like a huge learning curve, for me and for the producers and I think everyone involved, both financially, because I think we had to sort of curtail the screenplay to fit into a model financially, but also just the evolution of this story took so many fronts in that it started as sort of like this world post 9/11 where there was sort of like a secret underground shadow stock market in case there would be another terrorist attack that might, you know, unhinge the markets. Mm-hmm. But then we quickly learned through research that was a thing that, while one point, you know, might have existed, doesn't anymore because people are trading sort of off-site. So all these big companies that used to come to stock exchanges don't really do that anymore. They have their own backups off-site. So there really was no, like, governmental exchange that you could say, wow, like, that's where all the guys go if shit hits the fan. You know, that's how we started. And then I had to try to infuse it with some characters. And this was based around, you know, supposed to be based around a tale of redemption and trying to, you know, fit this into that. So the long answer, there were a lot of iterations of this. I think that the short answer sort of began as this idea that I was kind of enamored with this notion that the government would create a shadow market system in lieu of an attack. And I sort of started from there.
Wouldn't surprise me at this point.
Well, right, exactly. And that's, and you know what, it's one of those things where, you know, it probably does exist. It could exist easily. But then in speaking with, you know, these execs at Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan, you know, they say, well, that's all fine and dandy, but we would never want the government to necessarily control, some market system offsite because the markets are not, theoretically government controlled. So they say, you know, we have our own market backups where we would, we would have a backup generator, we would have a backup computer system, and we would, you know, bring that system back online so that we would be able to trade at an offsite, an offsite office space, with different traders or anything. So it ended up being something that felt really real and tangible. But then when you talk to these financial guys, there's just so many iterations of how people want to protect their money. Fantastically. I mean, I have to say, I've talked to and interviewed many people that would, deploy all sorts of different mechanisms to ensure that their money was safe and that no one else would be able to know how their money was safe, that it felt a little false to go at it from the government angle entirely.
And in your last film, Syrup, took place in the corporate world. So is this a trend? I sense a pattern.
You know, I mean, no, I mean, the only pattern is that I think, you know, I try to gravitate towards social issues or mm-hmm. issues that I feel might be important and sort of overshadowed by how glossy and showy they are. I mean, with Syrup, it was very much about how the world of marketing, you know, was all smoke and mirrors, and these people really manipulate us to feel like we're someone that we're not. Mm-hmm. And then with this one, you know, the attempt was to portray this system as something that was far more fragile than anyone thought it would be. And it was something that really is controlled by a few individuals who think the rest of us are really stupid.
And this is a lot more, this is more of like a cyber heist film than I think anything. It's,
right.
Yeah. It's more like The Big Short meets Heat or something along those lines. And in the sure. In the middle of it, you've got this white collar criminal, basically someone the audience would typically probably struggle rooting for. And I'm kind of curious why you decided to go this direction with your protagonist.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good question. I think I'll be asking myself that for a long time. I have no answer for that. I mean, I think that this specific role, while I don't necessarily want to speak to who exactly it is, it's mm-hmm. based on someone whose path was similar to this. And so for me, that's sort of how we founded this story in character, was through the individual that I had kind of interviewed the most. And so it made sense that we wanted this guy originally to be as unlikable as possible at the top of the movie and then redeem himself through the film. Now, you know, obviously verdict's out whether that actually happens. I mean, I think that, you know, the movie that you watch now gets bogged down in sort of the analytical details of how this, you know, how the plot plays out versus his personal journey. And so I think ultimately looking back on it, that could have been a little bit different, and it could have been, you know, characterized differently as far as that lead role goes. But, but yeah, I mean, it was something that sort of held true to the actual individual that I was interviewing, you know, on behalf of research for the film.
That's a cool way to go, because as soon as you say white collar criminal and people realize, hey, he probably is one of the people that took our house. I mean, it's hard to sympathize.
Right.
That's a good. That's right,
and,
a good
that, and that's the trouble with a movie like this. You know, is that it's like it. You know, when we made this movie originally, you know, The Big Short hadn't come out. I mean, there were aspects of cyber. You know, the cyber attack on Sony Studios hadn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
So there were things that weren't tangible yet about this film. So we would screen it, and people really wouldn't understand what was happening at all. And then we got to a point where, you know, there was like an arc that sort of crossed with the film, and there were cyber attacks that were happening. There was white collar, you know, sort of criminalization that was happening on a national level. And then the movie was too overt, and we were saying too much. And then people said, well, yeah, I'm not stupid. Of course I know what a cyber attack is. And so, you know, the process of just getting this movie made was 2.5 years, both financially, but also just trying to somehow like ride the wave of, you know, of understanding in the public eye. And so that was very tough for us, you know, as well.
That's good. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. If it came out a couple of years ago, it probably would have been harder to understand for a lot of people.
Yeah. It was a very, you know, and I watched The Big Short, and I was like, I mean, that was like my favorite movie, you know, of the year. I think it was last year. And then I know people that watched The Big Short with me, and they said, well, there was nothing to root for. I hated it. I couldn't get into it. I didn't understand anything. And I was thinking, well, shoot, if no one understands The Big Short, like, we're really screwed. But then some people did understand The Big Short, and we would screen this movie for those people because we thought that, you know, that was a similar audience. And they'd say, yeah, I'm not stupid. I get it. You know, and then so it was sort of like trying to figure out while we were piecing the movie together, you know, we shot it over the course of, you know, 6 weeks, but those 6 weeks were sort of spread out over 18 months for the film based on schedules and, you know, places we had to be. And so, you know, we were constantly rewriting, constantly trying to find a way within our very, very limited budget to you know, to hit a point of knowledge where we didn't feel like we were hitting it over the head, you know, for the audience. But again, I think that that's something that is like really tough with a, you know, with a film like this, that you by definition want to be character driven, but you still also want people to understand what's happening.
You know, I think it's great that you brought up the budget a couple times, because people look at the cast, you've got Frank Grillo, who's he's on fire right now. Minnie Driver,
right.
Leguizamo, you got McDonald, you got a lot of name actors. And people just assume, well, it's got to be a huge budget. But independent films, they don't work that way. So
right.
how did you get all these guys?
Right. So I mean, I think, that was a testament to sort of the passion and the script. And our main producer, Hillary Shore, who saw something in this and wanted to try to sort of recruit the right talent to bring it to life. And I think that, I mean, there's three phases to a film, right? I mean, obviously, there's the movie that you write, the movie that you shoot, and then the movie that you edit. And those are three completely different films, you know, no matter who you are, I think they'll tell you that. And so in script form, this read obviously differently than it shot, differently than it was edited. But, you know, we were able to, you know, sit down with someone like Frank, who, you know, before he was an actor, was in finance, you know, went to NYU business school. And so for him, you know, this was a different type of role for him to play, something that he was passionate about and felt he was knowledgeable in. So he felt sort of empowered to take on a new persona in his acting career while utilizing, you know, parts of his old knowledge. And so that was very interesting. And then from then it kind of, you know, trickled down. I think Minnie was excited to play someone that was, you know, a little bit of a stronger character. I mean, my one regret with Minnie is that we weren't able to financially add the days that I would have liked to really round out her arc in the film, because she's so good and she's so strong, And her moments with Frank are so beautiful that I feel like we could have, added some third act moments there had we, had the finances available.
What about Frank in particular? I mean, he's a really versatile actor. And like I said, he's been on fire the last few years. He's had hit after hit. What about him
Sure. Spoke
to you and said, this is the guy for Guy Clifton? And it sounds like you cast this before, he kind of got into his action role that he's been on the last couple of years.
Sure. Right. Well, and we were, again, this is a low budget movie. So how do you attract talent like that? So really we were looking for a partner in that lead actor. We were looking for someone who's going to come on as an executive producer, root for the project, really be a part of the project from the ground up and help us, recruit talent as well, on the acting side. So Frank had come in and we met preliminarily because obviously he wanted to meet me. And I wanted to meet him, and we sat down and had a great conversation and just hit it off as individuals. And then I think it helped that he felt that in that prep phase, he would have ownership over this. And so, for me, looking at Frank, he really plays this role well. He is in real life a family man. Mm-hmm. He is in real life someone who, goes home to his kids every day and, is trustworthy and honest and is someone of this sort of family guy. But he's still, there are layers of him where you see, wow, this guy could have gotten into trouble or might have gotten into trouble years ago. And so that to me was very interesting because I knew that, today he's the sweetest, kindest soul you've ever met. But, you look at him and you're like, this is someone that I don't necessarily want to mess with. And so that's kind of what I wanted in this role, someone where we think, with his wife, he doesn't understand necessarily how to strong arm her, yet in his business dealings or in other places, his moral compass might have been pointing in a different direction. And, Frank gravitated towards that as well because he felt that, there were two sides of the coin to sort of play. And he got that. And I think, in his business school days before he was acting, I think he knew a lot of these guys. And so he felt that he could, embody that in a way that other people couldn't. And that was true.
That's great. And I know I got to let you go here in a second, but I have to ask, as a director,
Sure. How
hard is it to make banking and computing, especially hacking these days, look sexy?
I mean, it's literally impossible. I think it's actually impossible. I mean, I said I was, while we were doing this movie, after the movie, I said I would never do anything with computer screens or television monitors ever again. I mean, it's something that is, it's a movie in itself and it's an element of the story in itself to just sit with graphic designers and come up with these elements on screens that, if you watch a clip of the movie amount to nothing, but if you watch the whole film, there's something that you want to believe. And it was really, really hard. And on our budget, we shot this and then put those screens in later. So we were so quick in the production, we had John for a week and a half, we had Minnie for a week and a half. I mean, we had to really get these scenes out that we didn't put as much thought into that until post-production. So, there was no finite timetable, so we were messing with these graphics for months and months and months to try to figure out what might work, and at times relying on those perhaps too much, and at other times maybe too little. So I think that, graphics and sort of computer screens and that stuff, while it's, incredibly underrated, like there's a reason why, there's like one company in LA that like does all the graphics for Rogue One, and creates these computer interfaces. I mean, you have to literally be a genius to birth an interface like Apple. I mean, there's just, it's insane.
Well, and the challenge of making it interesting too is extremely hard.
Sure. Right. Yeah. No. And I think I think when you see the movie, I mean, that's definitely something that, that you'll either gravitate towards or away from because it's objective. So that stuff could be really interesting to you, or you could be like, this is boring, And I think that, it's in those moments where I would hope people rely on the characters and the sort of the drive, the drive of that story. But yeah, I mean, I think it's keen of you to say that, it's so hard to, make things that are happening on a computer screen, you know, happen, you know, fast and furious, and then B, you know, with some sort of wow factor, because we've all seen the best interfaces in the world. You know, we all have computers that are best-selling products from, you know, best-selling designers. So, you know, how do you take that and say, okay, well, this is a year in the future, it needs to relay information to the audience, and it needs to be cooler than what they already have at home, and by the way, you only have, 4 weeks to do it and no money. And it becomes, you know, it becomes a tall order.
It becomes more impressive, too, honestly, when you see it.
Well, I'm glad. Well, that I'm relieved to hear.
So what's next for you after this?
Sure. So, I mean, I direct commercials in between films. And so I, you know, this was a long film for us. And I've, you know, gotten back into the swing of sort of the commercial world, and will and I'm reading, and will, you know, continue to write and find that next thing that I feel as with this is sort of on that sort of social awakening level, but still character driven in a way where I can, you know, commit everything I have to it for 2 years or 3 years and unapologetically, you know, fight to the death for something else.
That's fantastic. Well, I know I got to let you go, but I wanted to say best of luck on the release, and I hope everything goes great with it.
Great. I really appreciate it. And thanks again for taking the time. I really appreciate talking to you.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. Next movie, we'll talk to you again.
Absolutely. I hope so. I'll count on it.
All right.
We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
There you go, guys. That was my interview with director Aaron Rappaport on his new film, The Crash, which, again, you can now watch on video on demand. Once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. We try to bring you these interviews with independent filmmakers when we can, so I really hope you enjoyed this one. Go check the movie out. I'm a big fan of Frank Grillo. I love where his career has gone in the last few years. Minnie Driver is also great in this movie. There's a lot to like in The Crash, so definitely check it out. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, as well as whatever podcast app you use. Our normal show has a new episode every week, so be sure to check that out as well. Everything is always available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. With that, this is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater, or sit on your couch and watch The Crash, buy popcorn.